Heard y'all tearing up shit out there, kicking up dust, giving a motherfuck. Yeah, niggas. Cause I ain't mad at you. Now we was once two niggas of the same kind, quick to holler at a hoochie with the same line. You was just a little smaller, but you still roll. Got stressed to YA and hit the hood swole. Remember when you had a Jerry curl, didn't quite learn. On the block with your Glock, trippin' off Sherm. Collect calls to the tilt, saying how you changed. Oh, you a Muslim now, no more dope game. Heard you might be coming home, just got bail. Wanna go to the mosque, don't wanna chase tail. It seems I lost my little homie, he's a changed man. Hit the pen and now no sinning is the game plan. When I talk about money, all you see is the struggle. When I tell you I'm living large, you tell me it's trouble. Congratulations on the wedding, I hope your wife knows she got a player for life. And that's no bullshitting, I know we grew apart. You probably don't remember, I used to fiend for your sister, but never went up in her. And I can see us after school, we bomb on the first motherfucker with the bomb.
Okay, I am mad at you, but the door is closed. Like Nene said, the door is closed. Sometimes you just have to close the door. But anyways, welcome to the world where no topic is left untouched. I'm your host, Lexis Moore, and this is the free space, unfiltered, unrestricted conversation. Tune in as I discuss any and every kind of topic, giving my own opinion of what's going on in the world, while also sparking conversation using other people's point of view. New episodes drop on Fridays on Anchor, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts. You can also follow The Free Space on Facebook and Instagram at The Free Space Podcast. Follow on Twitter at @the_free_space. And if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you need some advice, or you need to get something off your chest, email the podcast at thefreespacepod@gmail.com. And remember, whatever you want to say, speak freely, because that is the motto of this show. Well, we are back for another episode. I'm sorry, I had a couple weeks off, guys. I had some technical difficulties, the life of a podcaster. But I am back with another new episode. This is episode 54, The Door is Closed, and we're going to be discussing closure on this episode, along with all my other fun subjects. But before we get into that, I want to introduce my guest for this episode, repping for the home team, Hoosiers. IU out here, gang, cool. Squad. I got my bestie, Bae, all the way out in Phoenix. Lo, say hey, Lo.
Hey. Hey, y'all.
And then I got, y'all, if y'all don't, y'all probably do know him because he pretty much famous in Indianapolis.
Stop it.
The man behind.
The goat of Indianapolis.
Okay, the man behind Party Girl Ball 1, 2, 3, and 4, 5 coming up. Mr. Jeff Williams.
Hey, what's up, fellow Hoosiers, everybody out here?
Yeah.
Thank you for having me, Lex.
Oh, it's no problem.
Stop the gas. Take your foot off the pedal.
Listen, we just gonna give you your flowers, sir. We gonna give you your flowers, okay?
Well, you need your flowers too for having this podcast, amplifying and providing, you know, space to share a very authentic and unique narrative.
This is what I'm saying. Y'all see, this is why. This is why I love Jeff. I appreciate that.
We're not talking about Lawrence and Issa.
Right, now we might not be friends during that part of the episode. We gonna be cool after this, y'all. Look, I ain't mad at you. That's my intro song. If y'all know I ain't mad at you by Tupac, that's a hit. But yeah. That's the vibe we're going with for this episode topic.
I need to add it on my speaker.
No, I was playing it earlier because I was trying to figure out, you know, what part I want to use. And I literally thought to myself, I said, now wait, hold on. Who gets the royalties for this beat? Because Tupac, Blackstreet, who gets the royalty rights to that? Because they were both in the 90s. I'm going to have to research that and report back. Because I've always wondered, and I feel like there's a couple other songs that uses the same like, I feel like Babyface definitely produced that, because y'all know it's in Soul Food, so
yeah,
okay.
I feel like Babyface probably gets a hefty percentage, so, but I just want to know which group, or like, you know, who had it first. I'm gonna Google check, fact that check out, and I'm gonna come back with that. But yes, I'm so excited to have y'all both here. I would say, speaking of Party Girl, so just to let you know, I have plugged Party Girl, and I've had other podcasts from other places like, what is this Party Girl? So I'm gonna let you know, I have bragged about Party Girl on y'all's behalf. I just wanna let you know that.
And I'm already looking for my dress.
Okay.
It's already. <Let's see>. Already.
Look, Party Girl 5, I'm trying to come out. Like, I might have a trade in this for this next one. I'm trying to come all the way out. Listen. I'm trying to drape with hair for this next one. Like, it's not a Party Girl 5. It's not gonna be a game. But yes, I need to let the people know about Party Girl Ball. What's it all about? From Nap With Love, Be Nip. Like I said, you just got projects on projects. Just gas yourself up real quick.
No, I think, you know, truly the testament of like the success of Party Girl really like is all about what you just said. It's the word of mouth. It's the fact that we connected our idea and our vision to an audience who wanted and we were willing to provide. Because, you know, it all started on Twitter with the idea of like, hey, like, I ain't seen no men dress up in a long time, whatever, in they suits. And girls is like, you know, I want to look good and go out. And, you know, and I was like, you know, we did that in college back at IU. We used to do parties and all that stuff. And when was the last time we actually dressed up to do that? A lot of people, we become like these young millennials, career, we rarely are dressing up. We don't even want to put on dress up clothes because of work. So it was like, how can we do that? But now that we're getting older, right, like how can we pivot and do something substantive, something that really provides value back into the community while we still turn up? And for me, my cousin Kelly, really the thought process was around highlighting and exposing our community to opportunity and technology. As we know, Indianapolis was becoming this large tech hub in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. Saw that, you know, when the automotive industry crashed and shit like that happened, you know, Black people in the city were really left behind. And considering we love our city, it was like, what can we do to ensure that this next generation, this next phase of what Indianapolis looks like doesn't leave Black people behind? Mm-hmm. So when you think about what's most important, it's, you know, technology and innovation, and then also entrepreneurship and ownership. So when you think about Party Girl, yes, a party, but behind it, as we know, the proceeds go to founders of color that's particularly willing and open to leveraging technology in their business. Because, you know, like when you think about businesses here, it's like, you know, especially Black-owned businesses, everybody limits us to like, oh, well, you sell hair, you do hair, you you know, you're a restaurant, or you have like the food truck. We can have all those things, but what can help those businesses be scalable, like larger and impact more people? Because we own the businesses, we are innovative, and we can scale our businesses. What else can we do? We can hire people that look like us. You know, it just solves so many other economic problems. So everything that I do, from that to From Nap With Love, which you know, we're scaling out this year, you know, creating a website and a platform to, you know, highlight people like yourself and on a regular basis. So maybe not just through Friday's newsletter, but now every time you publish a new episode, there'll be a link on our website for people to have access to that. Because From That With Love and then Be Nimble, again, it's all things that are centered on highlighting Black people and helping us get to that next step, particularly those creatives, Black creatives, and Black entrepreneurs.
Period. Like, I think that's
okay.
Period. Like you said it. That's it. That is it.
You know, 2,500 people came out, and we were able to cut $20,000 worth of checks this past year for Party Girl. And it was like, yeah, you can call it all you want, but at the end of the day, like, you saw those people on those stage.
Okay, listen, I was just so happy DJ Bandcamp got it. And I was like, yes, we got Bandcamp. I was like, I know they got money. We got Bandcamp. Yes.
That's how y'all, man. It's the idea of crowdfunding the culture, right? And you think about where we are right now in this difficult time and all exhausted. And, you know, there's this wave of Black empowerment that's coming back where we're supporting our own. And I'm so happy. Like, I don't care when people started it. I'm just glad that they did, like, that we are here. And, you know, that's truly what it's about. So how can we sustain that? So when you say we were able to, or when I say that we were able to cut that check, that we, I'm really speaking to the crowd because it was your ticket sales, it was you dressing up, you getting excited about it, that turned that check, which the first year went to the nonprofit, to the next few years, it going to those founders, those checks increased. It became more. And that was because so, it's us, crowdfunding culture.
Okay. Like, who gonna help us if we don't help us? I'm a firm believer in that. All of that. 100%. Yes. So, yeah, anybody listening, make sure y'all look out for the dates for Party Girl 5. Because I follow them on all the social media, so I never miss a beat. And I be tweeting. So make sure y'all check that out. Can people give donations if they want to, Jeff? Like, if they just want to, you know, slide y'all a little something?
So Party Girl is actually under my foundation, Be Nimble Foundation. And what we're doing on a recurring basis, even through the pandemic, we were hosting boot camps and workshops for people to learn how to, like, get sponsorships and do all these various things. So it's not just the party, it's this foundation. So when you donate, it's the foundation that actually cuts those checks. It's not just, you know, some promoter or anything like that. So
okay.
When you donate, it's through BeNimbleCo.com. And all of our 501c3 information is down there. We're not scammers like B. Simone. Everything.
He just had to put that in there.
There's no man of finessing here. Everything is legit.
I saw you post that earlier. I said, not man of finessing. Yeah.
You said we could be unfiltered.
Yes, you can. You can.
That's what happens. That's the story.
Look, before we get into that, I will make sure, just make sure I get your links and stuff so I can post them in the show notes so people can make sure they click and stuff. So we're going to make sure we make that happen.
For sure.
Yes. And then, Lo, I know you all the way out in Phoenix, but I want you to pub your stuff because I know you got projects. You know, I'm going to put on my bestie bae. Listen, I can't not allow my girl to shine. She got some stuff up her sleeve.
So Fridays, I host something called Wine Down Wit Fridays. Everybody, you grab your favorite drink. We sit. We talk about any and everything. It's just great conversation, great way to meet new people, and good conversation. Currently, I am working on another project, a wig line, coming soon. I'll be dropping that this year. No date yet. No date. Can't drop that, but it'll be.
Congratulations. That's a big
thank deal. You. Thank you.
See, entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs. Yeah. Yes, yes.
Can I hog that?
Always. Cause,
real quick.
Huh?
Can I take over real quick?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Lauren, what inspired you to start the wig line?
So, one of the things is, like, I'm a person, I can order another wig and have someone install it, but I know that there's like a market of people that aren't really experienced when it comes to wigs. So I wanted to make a wig line that any and everybody can use. Beauticians, people that just want to buy a wig for regular wear. But with these wigs, they've gotten really, really advanced on how to install them, and I want it to be easy installment. You can wear it every day. Pricing too. That's one of the main things where I just want everybody to be able to afford my wig line. Another thing is I also want to use my wig line to help cancer survivors. So I'm definitely going to be donating wigs to, like, breast cancer survivors. I mean, kids with, like, leukemia. So I definitely am looking to do both sides, you know, for people that want the everyday wear and then also that donation, that, you know, support of cancer patients. So
I love that.
Yeah.
I think coming out of the pandemic, that's what we're going to see. It's this idea of, like, we're eliminating all the fake stuff. Think about how many people has been, like, there's been a common theme. It's like, you're doing things that's really just self-centered and we supported you, but now it's like, you're revealing yourselves during this time when people are asking for compassion and understanding. So
Yes.
Businesses that will survive, I think, and I foresee the people, the influences, the folks that are going to be, you know, rising are those that are really focused and rooted on things that are just bigger than themselves. So mm-hmm. hearing you say, look, I'm starting from the foundation of it, like there's this aspect of giving.
And, yes.
I think it's dope. And it's only going to power you and propel you forward.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, that was my husband. His mom passed away from breast cancer. So, you know, and it's tough. It's tough to deal with. But, you know, that is one of the things like motivated me, because every woman wants to feel beautiful, you know. And I just remember, you know, seeing her and just everything she went through. I was just like, listen, I got to do something to give. And I'm a giver. So,
she is. She got a big heart, yes. y'all.
I'm a giver.
She will literally give you her last.
My last. I start off of my back to whoever needs it. So, I mean, why not do both? You know, give and be an entrepreneur. So.
Yeah. That's called social entrepreneurship. You know, yep. Social enterprise. I love it.
I just love this. Look at this for the culture. It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. I'm going to say, I'm going to throw in a joke real quick, though, because Jeff, you said something earlier about how, you know, we used to get dressed up back in college. I said, see, yeah, folks thought we was bougie at IU. Now, y'all want now folks want to get okay. Now y'all want to get cute. Y'all can thank IU for that. We set the standard.
We can put twerk stains on walls and our blue jeans and sweatshirts. Okay.
Come on, 2900. I left a couple jean stains on the walls.
Twerking days are over for me. I'm getting whooped out over here.
It's starting to hurt. Look, I'm back, be like, girl, okay. Now you are not 21 no more, sis.
Okay. The fast twerking songs, those are my bathroom breaks now. Those are not the songs I stay around for. My stamina, I don't have it anymore.
I gotta rotate songs. I'm like, the next one, the next one got me. But no, for real, I'm glad to hear all y'all that y'all have been working on and just, you know, just the fact, you know, we've just grown, you know, we was one point just trying to make it. Now we're all out here doing our different things to help the culture. So, you know, I'm all for supporting our own. And of course, I wish continued success with Be Nimble and Party Grind. And Lo, of course, you already know, I got your back with the wig business. I already said I'm ordering my wig. I already told her. I said, just let
affordable.
Me know.
Affordable.
Exactly.
It's going to be affordable.
That's I already told way. Her. Let me know. All right. So with that being said, we're going to go ahead and get into it. So our Speak Freely segment of this episode, continuing on just the spirit of Black Lives Matter, because that's clearly not going to die, which it shouldn't. We just want to keep the momentum going. That's actually what I wanted to talk about, because I have been seeing different, I mean, you know, not from personal people in my timeline, but just things that get retweeted talking about, oh, so y'all stop talking about Black Lives Matter. Or, you know, posting, like, you know, if your timeline has stopped talking about it, don't be afraid to shake the table. It's still Black Lives Matter. And I think that is a big part of, you know, what has happened overall with the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, it's the same cycle. Someone dies, we're all up in arms, we're in an uproar, we protest, it dies down, we don't talk about as much anymore, shit happens again, and we just keep repeating the cycle. But like this time it is different. I think we're like, at the same time, the fact that we're still going through this and in the midst of a pandemic at the same time, I think we're just all at the point like we really tired of this bullshit. Like we just really tired. And I think a lot of it is, you know, just in the past, you know, we know the police has fucked us over, but people always had some way to debate, because criminal records get thrown in, or, you know, how the fact that the police are taught to shoot to kill if they're considered quote unquote armed and dangerous. But with the stories of George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor, like, it was very clear that these people literally, like, clear as day, like, at this point, I don't think there's any way to really debate it. Like, these people were literally doing nothing to nobody, and they were brutally murdered. Like, the fact that George Floyd, the police officer, used physical harm to hurt this man, and it was plain as day, like, right there in your face. Like, you can't deny it. Breonna Taylor being shot in her home. And then we just had another one happen just a couple days ago in Atlanta.
In Atlanta.
With Rayshard Brooks, who what, he was just in his car at the Wendy's and he got shot in the back, and the police officers aren't even supposed to shoot someone in the back, and yet it happened. So it's just like, I know me, of course, like I try my best to post something, of course, share when and where I can in between work and breaks and motherhood and whatnot. I haven't got a chance to get out and protest. I want to, but I do, just because I have a son, I know how protests, I know it's not us getting unruly, but they get unruly because of other people, the police and whatnot. So I do be thinking like, okay, I got to make sure I come home because I have someone dependent on me. But I try my best to just stay in the know as much as possible without allowing it to just overwhelm me, because it does become a lot. So I was just curious, you know, what do you guys think about how we can find that balance of making sure we are keeping the momentum going, that we don't let it die, because we really need to see change. Like, it's getting to the point we can't do this no more. We are going to keep seeing riots and businesses getting burned. It's going to get crazy. So what do y'all think about just how we can do that, but also just be, you know, taking care of ourselves, our mental health, you know, so we're not getting bogged down too much, but that we don't lose that spirit and that motivation. Whoever wants to answer.
Want me to go?
Go ahead.
So I think that this is what was needed. The riots, the protesting, this is what we needed. And I think that it's great that you see all of these large companies donating to Black Lives Matter and all of this, but I think that it goes beyond that. Like, how can we get involved in our communities? Like, are there town hall meetings that we can go to continue to express the problem at hand? Me and my husband and some friends, we were talking about the things that need to happen when it comes to police brutality. One of the things that I brought up was body cams. How do we get, you know, the police force to be like, okay, a body cam is required for every police officer? Because I feel like that sometimes is a problem. Yes, I'm glad that we have the footage of George Floyd, although it was really, really tough for me to watch. But there were other situations where we don't know what happened, you know? Mm-hmm. We don't know what happened. Nobody was there to record it. It was just going off of, unfortunately, the word of the officer, you know, and the evidence. So I think that it just goes beyond just donating to Black Lives Matter. Like, we need to get involved in our community, town hall meetings, sit on the boards. Like, my dad sat on the board for Marion County, sat on the board. I mean, how do we get involved? We need to get involved in that way. Yes, protesting is great. It's awesome, but there's another step. There's like another level that we need to get to in order to really see change. Because like you said, it has been temporary. We get angry and then time passes and people go on with their lives and you don't hear anything else, and another incident happens and then we're angry again. So I think that we need to take more steps so that it's more of a permanent, like, Black Lives Matter, not just right now.
I feel that. What would you say, Jeff?
To the original question, really, like, how do you, you know, what do we do to make sure that it doesn't die? Lauren, yeah, you're right. I think it starts with, like, finding, you know, ways to get involved. What I would say is, it's kind of hard, you know what I mean, I'm seeing it as somebody who, you know, kind of has, like, a baby platform and does stuff and kind of seen out there. What I'm recognizing is, you know, the protests, and it has to go on, the riots, all that stuff is just, like, a part of it. It's just a thing that has to be done, but you're right, we have to do more. But I think our community and individuals get bogged down with the idea of, like, what's next because of public pressure and societal pressure on what that should actually look like. You made a point of, you know, not necessarily being fully comfortable protesting or going out there because you know how rowdy you can get and stuff like that. And I'm a firm believer that everybody plays a role. Every individual in society has a role in this human rights issue of Black Lives Matter. And nobody should have to or, you know, dictate what someone else's role is. I think what we have to do is play to our strengths. So the very fact that we're having this conversation and you're leveraging your platform on this podcast is an action. And that's something that you have a platform, you have people who listen and tune into you, you're bringing these topics up, you're playing your part, right? You know, maybe it's, you know, Law or someone else, maybe it's all about, you know, developing out guys to point people in the direction to where they may be able to get involved. Maybe it's passing out waters for protesters. Maybe it's, you know, it's sitting on those boards. I encourage people to find out and look within and understand their strengths and their capabilities and focus on being a part of the change in that lane. The bog down, the exhaustion, what I'm noticing is people overstepping or the paralysis. So you're not only in your lane, but you're in every other lane and you're trying to do it all. You're taking in all the information and you're being pulled in various, you know, directions. Stick with what you love, what you're passionate about, and you focus in particular on that lane. And then as far as the idea of how can we protect ourselves during this time, there's so many. For me right now, it's been running. I've been running nearly every day. I had 100 miles in May. I'm on pace to do even more than that this month because I needed to, like, escape and get out in nature considering the pandemic as well. Well, man, you know, it's really putting time constraints on when I'm actually locked in versus, you know, locked into the news when I'm actually focused on the solution. Also, I'm a person that finds peace and calamity and, like, calmness and stuff like that from actually doing things. So it's the boot camps. It's, you know, advocating. I'm now the chair of at my company or one of the chairs for the Black ERG group, you know, speaking on those panels to bring those things. Change, you know, empower. So now, you know, they've never had this chapter in our company in our region. And now after this, because of the dialogue that's been sparked in me, you know, being uncomfortable and having these conversations with white people and shit like that, it's now actually creating a you know, more allyship, more discussions, and more change. So that brings me joy. That's helping me because I have to do something to help solve it. For somebody else, it may be, you know, really being in one room and having your phone in the other, you know, maybe meditation is the prayer. It's going to prayer versus, you know, participating in the protest. So stick to your lane, you know, and understand how with the things that bring you calmness and you really lock in and you focus on that and set yourself to the standard of, you know, stick to it.
That's what's up. My son just came in the room. But no, I feel that. I think that running is definitely a good idea. Self-care. Yes, honey.
Calm down.
Calm down? Why I need to calm down? Secret life of pets isn't working, y'all.
Pets are so funny.
Mommy.
Yes. Okay, I'm coming in there to fix it. Give me just a second. I'm coming. But now, Jeff, I like a lot of what you said, like both what you guys said, taking those extra steps, you know, using your strengths where you can, like, you know, you know, taking that step and getting a position within your job. Like you said, Lo, what town halls can we get on, like be a part of? What boards can we get on? I think it is just going to take a lot of us getting on, doing that extra step, taking, you know, going the extra mile. And, you know, in the meantime, like you said, just doing what we can to protect ourselves and our mindsets and everything like that. Okay. Like right now, I need help protecting my mindset with my child. We gonna pause for just a second.
Don't do my godson like that.
Listen, I'm gonna ship him to you in a bit. You about to get you.
Come on, you know, Low love the kids.
Calm down.
Oh, see, he told me to calm down. Y'all hear this? This is a mess. Okay, yes, we need to take a small pause break from a child. Lo, I already told Lo, I'm going to ship. He coming to Phoenix at some point. Y'all can have him for 2 weeks, a month. Okay, go to the restaurant.
Bring him on.
Good job. But yeah, like I said, yeah, it is just going to take that extra step and going the extra mile and just, like you said, just, I think just doing what you can. I think we've all probably felt a little pressure, like, okay, am I doing enough to help the movement? Like, is posting enough? But, you know, like you said, like, just us doing a post or just having a podcast platform, as long as we are talking about it and just continuing to have the conversations, I feel like that is definitely going to help overall keep the momentum going. But we also just what we can do to take that extra step, you know, do what fits for you, you know. Like, because my dad and I had a conversation and he mentioned feeling like a lot of like art when Sean Reed all happened, and he was saying he feels like a lot of people, you know, it is a constant, the competition stuff between us that holds us back, but also like just us not really being willing to be martyrs like Martin and Malcolm were. And I think now we're at the place where it's like, okay, no, we really need to do something, whether it's we're on the front lines protesting, whether it is being at a town hall, whether it's sitting on a board, whether it's writing a letter to our boss about, hey, we need to, diversity training ain't enough. We need to actually be real. There's systemic racism happening. Like, I think just the fact that we are speaking up more than I think what we've ever really had before is really making all the difference. So I just think it's as long as we have to make sure we keep speaking up. But in the midst of speaking up, you know, if you got to take a step away, a day off Facebook, that's fine too, because constantly seeing stuff, I know sometimes I get in my feelings as soon as I see All Lives Matter, I be ready to fight. Like, I be like, no, like, I be ready to go off in all caps, like, I be mad.
I'll be having a log.
Woo! And then I be like, okay, Lex, chill, you just can't go off on everybody. But it gets to that point where it's like, what do we got to do to get y'all to get this? And it does get you upset. But so yeah, if y'all gotta take a moment off Facebook, do what you need to do. Like, don't let folks get underneath your skin. I gotta remind myself too, because like I said, I'm ready to fight. I'll be ready. But yeah, but also don't stop speaking either. You know, there's gonna be the ignorant people, but as long as we just keep going, I think I really do hope and believe we can really see some change, because changes are already happening little by little. So they're gonna have to listen to us. Period. Because we not about to let this shit die. All right. So continuing on. And then speaking up, going into Hollywood highlights.
If you are what you say you are, a superstar, then have no fear. The camera's here and the microphones, and they wanna know. Oh, oh, oh. The return. If you are
Black excellence. Go ahead and highlight this young lady. Her name is Kennedy Mitchum. She's a 22-year-old recent college graduate who recently wrote an email to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary people to say, listen, y'all need to change this definition of racism. It's not including the systemic racism, microaggression, and everything else that we be dealing with. And so they listen. And so they're going to change the definition of racism as it is written in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. Their head CEO, author, I can't pronounce his name. It's like Peter Swarovski. I can't pronounce his whole last name. But he pretty much said, like, the dictionary does get edited, but that definition hasn't been touched in like some years. And he pretty much like, yeah, we need to acknowledge the fact that racism has evolved in all these different levels. And the fact that it's happening in our system, it's happening in our education system, it's happening in our, you know, medical system, it's happening when it comes to employment and businesses and everything else. So I was like, you bet. Go ahead, sis. I said, let them know what's really good out here. So I think that's dope. So shout out to her, Kennedy. Thank you so much for speaking up. So like I'm saying, the more we speak up, the more changes we're definitely going to see. So don't stop speaking up. All right. Yeah. And then going into TV and film. So this is where me and Jeff, we might not be friends. No, I'm just kidding. Not yet. We're going to say that for the main topic. But let's recap Insecure, because now by the time y'all listen to this, the finale will have already occurred. But the finale we're recording on a Sunday. The finale has occurred, or is going to be occurring today. We know from last week, we saw a lot of Issa and Molly. Look, Lo, exactly. Lo just went on the camera. She just went, woosah. Woosah. I know. See, this is it. We got a woosah before we get into it. So if you haven't been keeping up, y'all know Issa and Molly have been at odds this whole season. Came to a big blow at the block party where they almost fought. They took some time apart. This episode, they came back together, had brunch. You know, we thought, okay, maybe they might get back on track. Maybe this might cool off. And then I'm fine. I'm not upset. See, look, he know I'm mad about Molly. Okay, I'll come fix Max in a minute. Okay, but yeah,
I smell tacos.
You said what?
I smell tacos. I'm
you
bad.
Smell tacos.
Going on out there.
Okay, hold on. We'll come fix it. Hold on, y'all. Be right back. All right, so yeah, so Issa and Molly, sorry to take another quick pause for my child, y'all. So yeah, so Issa and Molly, you know, they took their time apart, came back. We thought they was going to get back on track. And then, you know, Molly decided to cut up like she does. And, you know, like, because Issa really was trying. She was like, you know, I know, like, you know, I know we things have been off with us, but, you know, I reached out so we could talk about it. You didn't say nothing, so I thought maybe you weren't ready. And now here you are, you know, sending this text to my phone, like, here I am thinking everything's cool, and it's not. So what's up? And she, Molly, just, well, I just don't think that who you are and who I am actually fits anymore. And Issa said, okay. And Molly had the nerve to be like, okay. Yes, okay, sis. Like, what else? What else was she going to do? So I just want to know y'all's thoughts about the overall episode. We also had, of course, Issa and Nathan still kind of got a thing going on while she's also reconnecting with Lawrence. So there's a lot that could occur in this finale. I just want to see, what are y'all thoughts on Issa and Molly, what Issa should do with Lawrence and Nathan? Because a lot of people say that she should keep Nathan as a backup plan because technically her and Lawrence really ain't official. You know, and what y'all think is going to happen in this finale? I say, Lo, I know you, go ahead and share. You ready?
First thing I would like to say about Issa's and Molly's relationship, communication. Where is it? It's just not there.
They lost it in season two.
It's just not there. And I'm sorry for Molly, for somebody that talks so much, her communication sucks. Like that, like it sucks really bad. But I think, unfortunately, their friendship has been on the rocks for a while. And I feel like somewhere along the way, they totally forgot about boundaries because they don't have any. Mm-hmm. And I think that is one of the main reasons why their relationship, well, their friendship is the way that it is now, because mm-hmm. they had no boundaries. And now people started taking things personally, you know, like you gotta establish boundaries. But I'm disappointed in Molly. I really am.
As the majority
because,
of the culture is.
Like, I am really, really disappointed. Like, I feel like a mom, like her mom, like, I'm so disappointed in you. But no, I'm disappointed mainly because she had, like, it was her moment. It was your moment to literally lay everything out on the table, and you didn't. And then you just, in this sick way, just play victim instead of just owning up. Like I'm sorry, Issa did her part. She did her part. She reached out, said, hey, let's talk things out, and Molly froze up, choked. Reggie Miller, like, come on, girl, this is your moment. But I just feel like she blew it. That's it. That's all I have to say about their friendship. With Issa, Nathan, and Lawrence's love triangle. I think with Lawrence, it's too early to tell what is going to come out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And because Issa cheated on Lawrence, I think that she just needs to be honest and kind of get down to like what his intentions are, where is this going, before she makes any other moves with Nathan.
Okay.
Because it's like you fucked up the first time. You don't want to fuck up another time because you didn't ask, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I definitely think that they need to get out of that gray area and figure out what it is that they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the season finale, what is going to happen? Molly's going to be single. Let's start there. Definitely not going to have a man after this season. What else? I think, I mean, I know everybody wants to see Lawrence and Issa together, but I just don't know if that is going to happen. I honestly, and I really want to have faith in Issa, I really do, but I think she's going to fuck up again. I just see it coming. I just see it coming. I think that she is, her and Nathan are going to take it to the next level. And I think that because she hasn't communicated or doesn't communicate with Lawrence, Lawrence is going to choose to stay instead of taking that job in San Francisco. And if he gets unfortunately, Issa's gonna have to have that difficult conversation of saying, sorry, buddy, it's not you, it's me.
I'll say,
really how I think it's gonna.
See, I agree with everything you said with Molly. I don't even need to rehash it because,
ball-headed.
She completely dropped the ball in communicating. Their overall communication definitely fell off after season two. If anyone knows, if you don't know, now I've been an avid Issa Rae Insecure fan since she was doing Miss Adventures of Awkward Black Girl. So I'm dedicated over here. But ever since they stopped using Malibu, for those who watched from season two, because remember they had their first big falling out at the end of season one. And so in season two, when they needed to have that real, like, okay, girl, I'm gonna keep it blunt with you. I love you, but Malibu, you fucking up. Like, that's what they would do. And so they could know, they could be prepared, like, okay, yeah, it's harsh, but I know she's saying it because she's keeping it real. So they could have that understanding. Notice they ain't been doing that since. So then stuff started bubbling up, different things have been happening. They have been changing in different ways. Issa especially, you know, she's been on her glow up, which I'm so happy to see. Mm-hmm. And that has just, it's overflowed into their friendship. And so while they have definitely both done wrong, you know, Issa is very passive aggressive. She doesn't always address things right away. Because like I do say, just like Molly could have brought things up, Issa could have brought things up at the brunch. I could have seen that going either way. But then, you know, when the time did come, Issa was like, okay, clearly this is still bothering you. I was under the impression that it wasn't, but clearly it still is. So let's talk. Let's talk about it. Clearly it's still bothering you. And then Molly just, she did not step up to the plate. So then I do kind of feel like, well, I see why Issa was just like, okay, because like, I'm not going to beg you. Like she said, I'm willing to do the work. I acknowledge that stuff is messed up, but you have to meet me halfway. Communication takes two people. So it's like, if you're not going to open up when you're sitting here, the one talking about how off things are and how messed up things are, but you're not going to open up and say, this is how it's messed up or this is how I feel, I can't force you to talk about it. So it's like, okay, like I can't, there's nothing much else I can do about that. As far as her and Nathan and Lawrence, I do love her and Lawrence back together. I do love it. I be torn because I also like her and Nathan's connection. Because it's clear they have a connection. So as far as what is going to happen, I do think Nathan's going to come out of the bag and be like, look, Issa, I got real feelings for you. I know I messed up, but I really want to be with you. I can see it all on his face. Lawrence, whether he gets this job or not, I have a feeling he could get this job and ask Issa to move with him. Because remember, he bought a ring. If y'all been watching, he said he bought a ring. He could be like, Issa, move with me, maybe propose, I don't know. Or he might get the job, not take it, and stay because he does want to work out things with Issa. And I feel like Issa might be torn between the two at some point. Who she's going to choose, I honestly can't say on that. But those are at least I agree. Molly's definitely going to have to be alone for her to get it. That's
clear.
Jeff, give us the male perspective. What you thinking? Because he over there, he scratching his beard. He's contemplating, he pondering. I see the wheels turning.
I've been a fan. I've known about Issa since Awkward Black Girl as well. I think he does an incredible job of like highlighting a narrative that's typically been overlooked in society, specifically in the media. So shout out to her.
Yes, love Issa. See,
because we give her so many kudos and shit, like it's somehow translated into giving her character all these kudos and shit. And I'm like, half the time, she don't really deserve the benefit of the doubt that we as the audience is actually being propelled to do. What I would say, and I'm going to get back to that, but what I would say as far as like, it just seems like her relationship with Molly, it's evolving. Like they individually, you know, remember I'm on some new better, do better type shit.
Hers,
you know, Molly was doing self-care. She was going to therapy. Like they both individually been doing their unique work on being a better person for themselves. But through that time, as they're evolving as individuals, their friendship, they haven't had the space to do that same thing for their friendship. So that's why a lot of the things that have been buried have really just continued to elevate it. I personally don't understand, like as a man, because niggas like, if we got beef, like we either address it, you know what I mean? And if we don't, if we disagree, we just come to the known. But I can tell that this is really highlighting the strangulation even that friendships with women can actually have, and like how that also reflects and parallels with their relationships with their men. Like, bro, like, what, you passive aggressive as fuck. Issa has always been passive aggressive, even the broken pussy shit from first season. Like, Issa
is true.
Like, Molly is a problem. Like, we know that she has some deep seated issues that she still is not working out. And it's evident, even how the story is written out. But it's the subtlety of the issues that Issa has that's so relatable to each and every person that's watching it, that it actually makes us go less hard on her because we see ourselves in her. Like, bruh, like, oh, because we'll say, like, oh, yeah, I took the step, you know what I mean? I ordered the brunch. Okay, like, take the extra step.
I feel
start
that.
The conversation. But in your mind, you like, oh, well, I did this, so she got to do that. Like, do we really want to handle this? What does unconditional love mean? What does it really look like? Let go of your pride. Your pride's still there, too. It's obvious that she still wasn't ready. Like, to me, and if that's your point, you can see it. Like, Molly wasn't ready to have this conversation, and she came with the idea that, okay, we gotta address it. And then you don't address it. Because in Molly's perspective, Molly is in the right. Like, she feels that, well, I've been, these past seasons, okay for you. I've done all these things, right? Like, I've been there for you. Not saying she's right or wrong. But that's her mentality. So she's at that point where she no longer is allowing her into her boundaries. Like, so if Molly wants, if Issa cares as much as Molly does about the friendship, so from Molly's perspective, then Issa actually needs to take that extra step. Now, what I love about this is how it then kind of like takes and is framed in the idea of like who Issa is in her relationships with the men that she's involved with. Same issues that she had with Molly, she was having with Lawrence, right? Like, and I think we always see Issa taking accountability, but where is she taking accountability? She's shitting on herself and she's doing it in a joking manner, typically in the mirror. It's never to that person. And I'm seeing that in her relationship with Molly, as well as now in, you know, and how it has been with her relationship. So I'm curious of where it's gonna go, you know, moving forward, because she passing growth, but I just want to see what that's going to mean because now that shit is getting a little tricky. You know, honest about the fact that it was an old friend. How does that?
Yeah, she was.
Then, you know, good job. You know what I mean? That's the least you can do, that they let me back in after all this shit. And he laid his vulnerability, his pride of that. But here's my observation, right? And this is where me and you typically.
Like, we got a difference in the opinion and perspective.
It's all in love. But we were talking about like who should she be with and shit. I'm like, bro, like is Issa a good girlfriend? Is she a good friend? Like, I don't know. So it's like all these guys like are intended or are doing various things to support her, but I haven't really seen them show on TV how she's supporting me. And that's just the male perspective. Like, what has she done to support Lawrence? What has she done to support Nathan? It's from her vantage point. I just want us to, like, and I get that. I think that the television show is trying to show both sides. So I want them to show the accountability in a relationship with the woman. You're not her ideal. All right, that happened one time. Cool. Those are things that we can work through. But what does the other shit look like? The daily, the regular basis of the relationship. How is Issa accountable? And what are the things that she's actually doing? Because we typically see her doing what? Asking for shit from her friends, the men in her life, helping out, whatever. Yeah, she stepped up and she helped the nigga move. Okay, cool. Like, what?
She stepped up and helped the nigga move. Okay.
But yeah, like, and if y'all, and I'm open to, because I know I have blind spots as a man, but I'm like, I haven't seen her. I'm like, what is she showing me on television that says that I'm a great boy, like that I'm a great girlfriend, or that I'm like, that I'm adding value in my relationships?
I agree. I mean, I just love her. I love her.
And low-key, I think that's what Molly was alluding to, and Molly has been saying from day one. Like, girl, you ain't got your shit together. You hated your job while you shitting on Lawrence, and you hate your job. Have you ever thought about how you hating your job and how he's damn near a reflection of that, and, like, you going home and you on that bullshit, you not giving him a chance because you see yourself in him? Like, that's the way that she's talking about it, because Lawrence, for the longest, before his funk, was apparently holding her down and doing this other shit. So it just comes off as like that subtle passive-aggressive lack of responsibility, accountability thing. And it's like,
listen, I agree. Like, she has a lot of, she's not good, she's not supportive. Like, she's not. I mean, when you're in a relationship, you gotta hold your partner accountable. You can, and be supportive. And I feel like 2 years, you let this nigga sit on your couch for 2 years and you didn't do nothing to motivate him to be like, babe, you can do it. What do you need from me? Nothing?
We only see her shit on
Google. 2 years?
Well, remember there was at least a year she was doing it, from what we gathered from the closure conversation. So out of the 2 years, there was a year she was doing it, but then she stopped because she said nothing was working. She felt like everything she did try, trying to motivate him, trying to be there for him, it wasn't working.
And but you know what? I love that. What does that look like? Like, I don't know what Issa's trying looks like. I've never seen
it. Yeah, like the effort.
Okay,
like,
that's okay. Because we never seen it. We don't really know what that was. Like, what all that entails.
And that's what I was trying to get off. Like, when we were talking previously. It's that. It's like, okay, yeah, you tried. Like, everybody has good intentions. That doesn't mean they manifest into, like, something that's connecting with, you know, valuable. He wasn't asking her to solve the problem. I mean, every episode... And I guess that was the point, that they were trying to show that she was tired of it. But I'm like, I'm not understanding why you're tired of this while you're also going through your own shit. Like, I don't know. Why are we giving her the benefit of doubt? Like, her trying, like, and her support. And for 5 seasons, we've only seen her go to the events. Like, it's not like she's, we're not telling you to spend all this money to show your support. But I don't feel... I'm not seeing the value that Issa adds. I'm sorry.
So I think I think a lot of what you're pointing is kind of like is pretty much the point in the behind underlying thing of the entire show of it being called Insecure, especially if you watch Awkward Black Girl, because a lot of who she was as her character on that, she does bring into Issa on Insecure. She was passive aggressive in Awkward Black Girl. And that's why a lot of us love this so much, because it's like, oh, it reminds us of, you know, the comedy aspect of that. But on Insecure, she does go deeper. So I think that's what is causing us to really have these conversations and really look like, okay, yeah, we love Issa. Yeah. But like, she's got her faults, just like Molly got her faults. Lawrence had his faults. And I think that's part of the reason why I love Insecure so much, because it allows us to really look at the characters and, in a sense, look at ourselves. I ain't gonna lie, there was a moment I said, oh, I hope I ain't like Molly, because I know I got some insecurities, but I really hope I ain't like Molly.
I remember you asked.
I was like, Lord, am I like Molly? I don't want to be like Molly. I was like, I don't want to be like, it really causes us to really think. And because a lot of the things they're going through are relatable for us. So Yeah, I mean, you know, season five, y'all already know that's been renewed for season five. There are still a lot of things that not even just with Issa, Lawrence, and Molly, but even like with Tiffany and Kelly, like in conversations I've had that I would like to see more of too. So maybe depending on, I feel like as each season we get a little bit more. So I don't know, maybe this is Issa Rae, because that's separate from Issa D. Maybe it's her way of building up for us, you know, getting all the puzzle pieces together. And then maybe, you know, as season five or season six, however long the show's going to be on, we'll get to get more of those puzzle pieces put together. But yeah, but definitely overall, like I said, Issa has grown, but just like, you know, Molly, Lawrence, everybody on that show has had some growth and may still have some things to work on in the midst of that. I totally right. agree there for sure. But we're gonna see what happens in this finale though.
I just really hope that they at least get better with their communication, yeah. like Molly and Issa, only because it's like there was no boundaries. So now y'all mad at each other. Y'all walking around with this chip on your shoulder because, oh, mm-hmm. she said something the other day. So let me say something today so mm-hmm. she can feel how I feel. Mm-hmm. And I think that they just have a really, really just like this bad habit of just, I don't know, like, you can't be a hypocrite, like, you know, but in that same token, yeah. if someone is addressing you, like Molly has told Issa about herself multiple times, if someone is addressing you about your issues, that is not your time to talk about their issues. And I feel like that is where Issa is wrong. Like, she tried to tell you, like, hey, this is how you are. You use people, like, and it's like, oh, like, well, you do this. You're not going to get anywhere doing that.
Hell nah. Yeah. She always deflecting. Like, that's all I see. Like, bruh, you always deflecting. And I don't know. And it's her insecurities, right?
Like, yeah. I mean, I think it's a combination. Yeah, and I think it's a combination of both their individual insecurities influencing how they deal with each other in their friendship. So everything gets muddled together because of what they're going through in their personal lives. So yeah, I think
she's doing the same thing with Andrews. The same thing that she did with her dad. Like,
oh my gosh, that was so extra. I was like, bro, why are you so mad at your father? Why? Why?
And you couldn't go get the damn Indian food. Damn. Can Nick eat what he want?
I was like, so you just gonna avoid his brother forever? So when y'all get married, you're not gonna go to the family reunions? Like, what? How are we about to make this work? Like, how?
This don't make no sense. She handled that situation terribly. I'm sorry. I mean, black power all day, but she could have handled the situation way better than how she handled it.
I don't want to say too much on it because we got more time. But I am going to say this with that, like you said, Lo, off of black power. But this is how you know, this is my final point, we're going to move on. But this is how you know Molly really ain't ready to fully address this, because she literally said, did I fuck up? So that's, when you have to question, did I miss it? Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did.
Calm down.
Terrence, though, I'd be upset about Molly.
Mommy.
Yes.
Calm down.
Okay, I'm calm down. I'm okay. You go finish watching Trolls. Go ahead. It went off. It is not off already. Go watch Trolls. Yes, it is. I know it's working. Okay, all right. But yes, that's my final point on Molly. She knows she messing up. She's just not ready to dress it. But I think the finale, she's going to have to get ready for sure, because she's about to get a real awakening.
Or get beat up. I'm just playing.
Well, we'll see. All right, so moving on from Insecure, because we'll clearly be on that for the rest of the time. In music, the next versus battle coming up is Alicia Keys versus John Legend, and on Juneteenth. How are we feeling about it? I'm kind of looking forward to this. I love Alicia. I love John Legend. Are y'all looking forward to this one? Or y'all probably just gonna catch the highlights on Twitter?
I think that it's gonna be nice. I'm just gonna say the nice comment. I'm sorry. I think it's going to be nice.
It's going to be nice.
Alicia Keys.
I think if she sticks to everything before Girl on Fire, we'll be straight. Like, just don't play That's nothing it. After the girl. You can play your first five albums, Songs of Dave, and in this order, Songs of Spider, Diary of Alicia Keys, As I Am, Element of Freedom. Wait, hold on, there was another album. Oh no, I think Girl on Fire was the fifth album. So yeah, so the first four albums we'll take. Oh, she did have the live album because Unbreakable's on that. We'll take those. I don't need nothing else after. Don't give me nothing, girl.
I don't want to hear no hollering from her. Just stick to the basics.
Please. Give me the hits. Just give me the hits. That's all I need. What you think, Jeff?
Both powerful voices always love their content. So, you know, this is going to be cool.
Definitely cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
Let's just hope.
I'm still mad at Nelly.
Nelly dropped the ball. Yeah. He just dropped the ball. He started going to his crossover stuff, and we was like, bro, this is not the time. Yeah. the time or the place.
Yeah, Alicia Keys Alicia Keys and John Legend, they have powerful songs, very inspiring, very loving and hopeful. So I get why they would do that on Juneteenth. Mm-hmm. Is that the mood we're going to be in on Juneteenth? I don't know. I feel like we on some Solange, for us, by us. We mad. Fuck all this shit.
A seat at the table type shit.
Yeah.
NWA.
Yeah. Like, don't be more like Black Power.
Yep.
Like, you want to hear that. But they going to give us the medicine that we need.
Mm-hmm. I agree. You sound dramatic.
Girl, the most. Too, but for sure, definitely so. I think because you know they're definitely two powerhouses as far as not just singing, but they both actually play the piano. You know, they actually be writing their stuff. So I like the pair together. So I think I hope it gives us maybe a healing, soulful vibe that we need. Just give us some peace of mind in the midst of all this chaos. So I'm looking forward to it. And then in sports, so y'all know recently the NFL apologized, quote unquote, for pretty much not acknowledging that systemic racism is a thing. And they're planning to pledge $250 million over 10 years to go toward, like, provide proceeds that to organizations or things against systemic racism. And which is all good and dandy. It's nice. But the big question is still on everyone's mind. So are we going to hire Kate back or not?
Period.
Cause I mean, like I've still been watching football. Cause I don't watch football for the NFL. I just like football, but I'm still riding for my bro, Colin. Like there's no reason that this man has had to be out of work like he has. And I know, like, I guess some people have tried to talk to him or negotiate things, but I think he might be the place where, like, you know what, I don't even know if I want to play for y'all no more, because I kneeled, you know, out of respect, you know, trying to be peaceful about it, which a veteran of the military told him, hey, like, if you want to get people's attention but not cause too much of a ruckus, kneel, but at the same time let folks know what's up, kneeling is the way to go. So now here we are in chaos, and now y'all want to quote unquote apologize and think throwing money at the situation is going to solve the problem. No, give that man his job back. Like, that's what y'all need to do. Like, I'd forget $250 million. Give that man his job back, because that's really how a lot of the shit you've had to go through and the backlash started with y'all pretty much blackballing this man to not be able to make a living. But, you know, God be covering folks, because, you know, he had the endorsements, Nike, you know, Colin straight. He ain't suffering, but it's a simple fact that he came to play football and y'all kept this man from doing something he loves because he took a stand. And now y'all want to recognize that. And you still really ain't even recognize it because
they didn't.
Y'all, and I know they did the settlement and all that, but still, like, money is not going to solve the problem.
Yeah, fuck that.
exactly.
I think where our goes back to this being 2020, like 2020 vision, not year 2020 or whatever. Like, no, this is 2020, like, correct vision. It's a lot of correction going on. People no longer just want the cake and shut up. Like, we want real change. And the NFL, yeah, you can apologize and acknowledge that systemic racism exists, but you need to acknowledge that it exists within your establishment. These owners are owners. Like, think about it. We call them owners. Like, it's them who are perpetuating these systems in place. Like, it goes beyond Cap getting his job back. It's the lack of black coaches. Like, how is 75% black, but yet only a couple of head coaches are black?
Mm-hmm.
And you'd rather reach, and you have these viable assistants, the black coaches, you'd rather reach back to the colleges and get a white coach. It's a couple of coaches that have made it to the Super Bowl, like a Lovey, who doesn't get a job. And that's important to me. I think the NFL needs to not only take a stance on racism, but also from the aspect of their owners are perpetuating those systems and playing by those same systems. So that has to also be dismantled internally. At $250 million, yeah, great. We're going to take it, and we're going to move forward with it. But at the end of the day, like, let's handle it at home too. Well, we need to do that. And if not, we're going to see some huge changes, because I think athletes are fed up, period.
We're definitely fed up.
I definitely agree with that. I think that, like, the apology, the donation was cool, but I would have really honestly liked to see them personally recognize Colin. Like, let's not beat around the bush. No, I think that would have made me feel a little better about just the initial step that they took in regards to the problem. But I do feel like they kind of beat around the bush. They didn't want to, like, face it like that. You know, they have issues within the NFL. Like, you know, Colin was kneeling every game, like, almost. And, like, y'all made it a problem. And he deserves an apology. A public apology, not just some, here's some money and you go on about your, no, there needs to be an apology. So,
for sure. Definitely a public apology.
I agree with everything that Jeff said, though.
I said definitely a public apology, because y'all pretty, I mean, like, because my thing is, yes, he was blessed to get the endorsement, but what if he hadn't? What if people backed off out of fear of, you know, losing their dollars and whatnot? So what was this man gonna do? You know, like, so yeah, y'all need to acknowledge that the issues that y'all got in y'all own organization before y'all just, you know, try to apologize and play nice. Like, no, yeah. be real about your BS that you own, because
they did him wrong.
A lot of it.
Like, you did him wrong. You owe him an apology.
Yes, yeah, but you do.
What I'll say is, now it's harder, and I don't think that they can, because that would also be an admonition of guilt. But we also, and when casual people typically talk about it, they forget that this is a league. It's like the managing board of the 32 individual teams and owners and businesses that are making decisions on Colin Kaepernick. It's not, when people say the NFL, what they truly need to say, like, we have to be clear, we're talking about the owners within the NFL. Because it's not up to your boy, the commissioner, to give Colin a job. Each of these teams has an individual responsibility, and the individual responsibility to do those things. So the players' union can only go so much, and that's why they assisted that, because it's very clear, right? But this goes back to them, and at the end of the day, they have the most power, and we have to figure something out with that.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't want people to get confused and say, like, the NFL. No, it's the Detroit Lions. It's the Indianapolis Colts. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's 32 individual teams.
Yep.
In the NFL, yeah, the commissioner can, you know, say what he say, and he can do all that, and the NBA, NFL Players Association can do their part, but the onus goes back to, and the responsibility falls on those owners to change.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's layers and levels to this.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, I also was going to bring up the NBA too, because you know they are looking to reopen and restart the season and what, or pick up where they left off or whatnot. But you know, Kyrie Irving, you know, was recently on a phone call with other players like KD and Carmelo Anthony, and they was pretty much talking about not supporting the reopening of the season because of the protests. You know, pretty much Kyrie flat out said, he's like, I'm willing to lose it all for reform and change. It's nothing. And then, you know, LeBron released a statement saying, feeling like even if the season does reopen, he could still, you know, individually affect change. So I've seen some people be like, man, yeah, I'm team Kyrie. And but I know niggas want their basketball back.
Yeah, it's
Kyrie. Hello. You're not even in the playoffs. So throw that out there, but
well,
go ahead,
Jeff. Yeah, no, NFL, like, and I know we like to contrast, but when we contrast, we also have to understand the difference in the leagues. Like, the NBA versus the NFL. NFL is all about the shield. It's all about, you know, the brand as a whole. The NBA has been, especially since, you know, since its foundation and how it's grown popularity is through the faces of the NBA players. So they inherently have more power and control than the NFL players do, because who you're marketing is this right here. It's
facts. Facts.
And they have more leverage, and that's why they could get a commissioner, like an owner, to sell the team. Like, it's levels, right? And I'm in support of what the players want collectively. I think that's good. It's good and bad. But what I would just like to acknowledge is that NBA specifically has shown a bigger and larger, broader commitment to these issues. And it's never been, I've never had to second guess where they stood. The players do have a lot of money. I think it's very reflective of where we are in society. And if the NFL players had more authority and influence, they'd probably be saying the same things. Because our generation is just different. It's not just about the money for us. So it's something bigger out there, and, you know, period. Like,
you're right.
So it's less at stake than everybody else, especially for the people that you mentioned, like the Kyries and LeBrons, because, I mean, hundreds of millions. They load it.
Right.
What are the rookies saying? What are the people who still in apartments, the condos and stuff like that, who aren't as established? Those voices should be considered as well. Selfishly, I'm just curious about how all this is going to impact the All-Star, because it's supposed to be in February.
Right. Good point.
Which was also around Party Girl.
Yes, I remember, yes.
We're gonna do our thing regardless, but it's just curious about how that will impact us in that regard. I get it. And Kyrie, and I want to put this on the record, Kyrie is the vice president of the NBA Players Association. So What he's saying is, it's not like his voice and his platform is that. It's not just about his team. It's about the collective, you know, the sentiments around the league. Because the players have elected and voted him into that role.
So pretty much he the voice for them, pretty much.
One of the voices. He's okay. One of the voices. LeBron got his voice, but Kyrie clearly has a voice. He has the eyes. We've seen Jalen Brown out there protesting. We've seen Russell Westbrook. Like, they feeling this too. So I don't want people to just pin it on him because he flat earth and all this all knowing shit. Like, no, like, people really think like this.
I believe that they do, because it was a lot of, you know, a lot of big players, multiple big players was on the phone call discussing things with him, from what the reports say. So, like I said, I'm all for the players coming together to stand up for themselves and the Black community and reform. Biden means necessary. If they gotta go Malcolm on them. We'll do what y'all got to do. You know, Malcolm after he went to Mecca, not before. But yeah, so I'm all for change at the end of the day. All right, so we going on to Lex got the tea, because y'all know I keeps my tea. So I have for boot up and broken up on this episode. No, we're not doing trolls. Trolls does not work. Go back and watch Emoji.
We can't hear you, girl.
Oh, my bad. I be forgetting to unmute sometimes, y'all. I keep the tea. Look, bloopers. I need to start doing bloopers and outtakes, because that would be really funny. Okay, so for boot up and broken up, I don't have anybody who's recently broken up. I guess folks is getting their loving on during this quarantine. But speaking of which, Tiana Taylor and Iman Shumpert definitely have been getting their loving on, because they're welcoming a second child into their family. They announced it in a recent music video. So, congrats. I think they're just a cute little family. I think they're very adorable.
They are.
I'm here for it. I'm excited for them. So, yeah. So, kudos and congrats to them. And then for my big cup of tea, so as y'all know, that's the messiness of the messiest. So, folks was all in an uproar this past week over the rumors that Beyonce would be starring as Storm in Black Panther 2. I mean, posts went crazy on the timeline. Like, someone actually wrote up a whole petition to keep Beyonce out of Black Panther 2. Like, and like that was the headline. And I now y'all know I love me some Beyonce. I will recognize that as a fan of Beyonce, her acting is not her strength. It's just not. We recognize this. I love Dreamgirls, and I will watch Carmen Hip Opera for the nostalgia, you know, Fighting Temptations for the music if it come on. But we know Beyonce's acting is not her strength. But I feel like people want to just like yell it from the mountaintops, like sis, we know, like this is not nothing new, and make it this huge thing because it's Beyonce. And my whole thing is like, yeah, I not even just Beyonce's acting. I wouldn't want Beyonce as a Storm because she don't look the part. Like it wouldn't transfer well. Like I'm a need for y'all. This is Wakanda. This is Africa. Be realistic. Beyonce don't look. She's not gonna fit like she looks like she come from Wakanda. She just not. I would prefer to see someone like DaWanda Wise or Tika Sumter. You know. Jeff's like, wait, what? Like, I just, because Beyonce just stands out on her own. When you look at Beyonce, it's like, that's Beyonce. Like, you can't, like, it's not going to fit to me. Like, it's just, it wouldn't fit in general because it's Beyonce. But I just think it's so funny how people are so quick to, like, we're so quick to just make this a huge deal. Like, a huge deal to the point of signing petitions. Because my whole thing is, even if she was cast, there are folks that are still going to go see it so they can talk about how trash she was. So either way, she's still getting paid. So it's like, if you don't want her to act, but yet you still going to watch the movie, like whether you watch in the movie theater, whether someone buys a DVD, she's going to get paid regardless, even if she was acting. So if you don't really want her to act, then don't see the movie. Like, I mean, but my thing is, and we all found out anyway, it wasn't even true. Like, people saw this YouTube headline and just took it and ran with it. And I was like, y'all, it was a speculation video. Nothing has been confirmed. I mean, if she is, it's probably going to be some with the soundtrack. And then the movie deal that she has with Disney apparently is for documentaries, which everyone says she is definitely great at with that, of course. So, yeah, I just feel like folks don't fact check, first of all. And second of all, people, I feel like, just like to talk shit sometimes about Beyonce, or just people who are successful just to talk shit sometimes. That's my opinion. What y'all thinking? I said, Jeff, you was over there. I'm going to let Jeff go ahead, because he made some faces.
Yeah, well, it was about her not fitting the part, because I don't think Storm is from Wakanda.
She's an African princess, though. Aurora Monroe is her original. She's another African princess from another tribe.
Right.
Yeah.
So even with that, off of technicalities, it's light skin, it's high yellows, it's everything. Black is on the spectrum.
This is true. Very true. Very true. You know, I'm not.
Look at him. I am.
Let me make it clear. Let me make it clear. I am no way in shape or form in favor of colorism. I'm not. But at the same time, we also know in Hollywood that light-skinned actresses and actors do get favored over. Because like the whole, what was it, in X-Men Apocalypse?
Halle Berry before.
So, I mean, personally, I liked Halle Berry's Storm, but folks was trashing her, too. I was like, damn, y'all can't, Halle can't? Okay.
respect. I mean, that was just an aside. I was teasing you.
No, I know. Yeah,
we know what her range is. It is long when it's in music, and I think people are just bored. They decided to, like, turn that into a thing. But as far as, like, just overall, like, I think people should give our, like, you got to allow people the space to, like, do those things, you know, to experiment. People evolve. And who's to say she wouldn't turn around and kill it? Maybe that's the role that she needs. Because whether we like it or not, Beyonce is acting every time she gets on stage.
Yeah, she's doing her albums, her videos, she's giving us a character. She's performing. Exactly. Like, that's who she is. So it is just a matter of her. Personally, I think Dreamgirls was one of her best roles as Dina. I think if you know the original story of Dreamgirls, I think she did well with that. But a lot of people just like, nope, she can't act, she's trash. And I'll be like, damn, y'all, like, okay, it's not her overall strength, but y'all ain't gotta tear her down like this. Like, people just be really on her head. And I'm not saying that because I'm a Beyonce fan, but like, I feel like sometimes just in general, people be so quick to tear folks down. And it's like, would you want somebody talking about you if you was trying to pursue acting, music, you know, anything, and just be like, no, you're trash. Like, maybe this is not your strength. I'd rather you say, like, this is not my strength or in how I can improve versus being like, you know, you're just trash. Like, that don't help the situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're right about colorism and all that shit existing, especially in Hollywood. They quick to put a big name to sell things. But I think Marvel, mm-hmm. in particular the Black Panther and Ryan Coogler coming back, like, they don't cast like that.
Right. I mean, definitely not.
So poignant. With, like, even in that first move, like, it was so well thought out that there's no way that I could see, like, they would have to have had a force hand to actually put it in. And they would diminish what, not necessarily just because she's an actor or not a good actor, but really from the aspect of how the characters molded in this phase. And plus, they're ushering in, if Storm is in it, people weren't even thinking. Like, if Storm is in it, Black Panther, that means that it's going to be an intersection between Black Panther, and that's how they're going to introduce the X-Men into the Marvel plot in the right. next.
Yeah, because they got the rights now to start working on that. Yeah.
Exactly. So that also means that Beyonce will be signing up to be Storm in all these other movies, too.
Mm-hmm.
What has she shown us? Aside from Nala, what has she done? Music. It's been the voiceovers. It's been the PSA, so
right.
Relax.
Yeah, Beyonce, I'm not gonna say her acting sucks, but she definitely has some growth. I will say though, you gotta give people time to get better too.
Yeah,
you know, like, you can't totally just be like, well, you're a singer and you need to stick to singing. Like, no, it's okay right. for her to act. It's okay for her to be in movies. Let her do that. I will say that she has been given roles that are a little too big to fill. I will say that because she doesn't have that much experience. Mm-hmm. But I do think that people should give her a chance in the acting world. And when I saw the whole rumor going around, I was like, this cannot be true. This
right.
It's
like,
too it just, big of a role.
Right.
I'm sorry. It's too big of a role for Beyonce. But get off her head. If she wants to explore different avenues and different industries, let her do that. Just let her do it. Let her flourish.
Exactly. You know, like, because at the end of the day, it's not putting food on your table. Like, it's putting food on her table for her kids. So, like, is not
and she's not the first. She's not the first because you have these NBA ball players making this whack ass music.
Okay.
Ain't nobody getting on them for that. No.
At all.
Let her do her thing.
And
the music is whack too. I've taken a listen multiple times. I've tried to get into it. No.
Now I will say,
I'm not knocking them for it. If that's what they want to do, let them do it.
I will say, what was it? The Cypher from the hip hop, the most recent hip hop awards, and Mon Shumper was on there. He had some bars. I was like, okay.
Dan Lilly got some bars too.
He had some bars. I was like, okay. Damien
had some bars.
I said, I see you, bro. Okay. But yeah, I agree. Like, just let her look. She gonna, because at the end of the day, she gonna live her life and she's still gonna get paid. Period. Mm-hmm. We still gonna buy tickets to her tours. We still, like, I'm waiting for Rona to live so I can finally go see her on tour. I have yet to go see her on tour and I need to go. So I'm just waiting. I'm waiting for the day. Hopefully it'll be in 2021, next text check. So I can afford them bitches. All right. So we're gonna go ahead and get into the main topic. I do apologize that we've had to stop. Y'all know motherhood sometimes just be coming up. But we are finally at the main topic. And off the spirit of Insecure, if you hadn't counted, me and Jeff had our own private discussion, conversation, debate, thesis, dissertation, whatever you'd like to call it. We had our own separate conversation discussing Issa and Lawrence, their relationship and their closure conversation. And, a lot of people had a different opinions. I had asked, people like, okay, do y'all feel like there was enough in this conversation? And I had people say they felt like there was. They feel like everything that needed to be said. Like, it was clear that they both needed their time to grow individually, and they were both willing to, open up and address certain things that went wrong. Lawrence asked his questions. Issa, told her, like, what she was feeling at that time, and it was cool. Jeff and I had different perspectives. And so it just got me to think, and clearly it definitely sparked conversation elsewhere, because I listened to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast, and Dr. Joy Bradford actually had an episode based off Issa and Lawrence's conversation and closure and whatnot and what that means. So I figured, let's talk about closure, because I'm sure we've all and especially with now Issa and Molly's situation, we've gone through closure with relationships, friendships. Okay, when should we address things? What shouldn't be addressed? Should we just walk away and just let that be that? So yeah, I wanted to discuss it. So overall, on Issa and Lawrence's closure conversation, how do y'all feel about how it went when they were addressing their relationship issues, the cheating, all of that? Whoever would like to start.
Ladies first.
I would like to say that I think that it was nice to see them actually sit down. Nice for them to actually sit down and talk about things. But I will say that I wanted a little bit more from Issa. I feel like, in a way, she tried to justify her cheating.
Jeff is happy. He over here basically like, yes!
mainly because it all could have been prevented. You broke up with him initially. Then you retracted. And then you cheated. Like, no! That's not his fault. That's your fault, because you had the opportunity to do it the right way. You know what I'm saying? You had the opportunity to cut ties the right way, and she didn't. And so the conversation, to me, it was cool that they were able to sit down and talk, but I feel like that was not her time to be like, I cheated because you did X, Y, and Z. No, you cheated because you wanted to, like, that was your choice. That's the choice that you made. So I didn't really like how she made it out to be like Lawrence's fault. Like, I didn't like that.
Yeah, that's how I felt.
It made me cringe.
Yeah, I left that conversation, as I told you, Lex, that I was unsettled because I love that they allowed Lawrence the space to be vulnerable about where he was and what led to, you know, the things that were happening with him and him acknowledging how that could have been difficult for Issa. I didn't get in. It gave her the space, and he gave her the space to talk about how it made her feel, to show how she was impacted. Bro, like, it was time where I didn't want to come home because of how I felt and all this other shit. And I'm like, yeah, that conversation was about Lawrence taking accountability and responsibility and giving Issa the space to be clear about her emotions and how his shit affected her. I didn't see that in reverse. I didn't hear her talk. It wasn't about the cheating. It was about everything else. Like, where did you take in accountability to the fact that you were avoiding these conversations? Like, we weren't good. So I didn't even want to come home. To me, I read that as, it's a broke boy. He's sitting on the couch. He's mad. Like, we're not in a good space. I've tried to, like, help him out, and he's not getting help. So I can't stand to be here or whatever. And it was like all this then led to me, you know, you're not loving on me, you're not doing all that other shit, which it's blatantly clear even through that conversation that you knew some shit was going on with him. So what were the steps that you were taking to assist him, but also where was the acknowledgement in how you might have also created that weird space at home? You were unhappy in your job. Maybe that could have led to and impacted the way in which you showed up for him. We got to let go while we're here. Let's keep this on record. He was contributing to the house. We have to stop saying that he wasn't. Like, he had a savings. All the proof is there. He had the savings and the unemployment. He felt ashamed because he wasn't doing it to his ability that he would want to. But this idea that she carried the relationship, man, when has he carried anything? Like, she's never carried anything. So why would we assume she was carrying this relationship? She wasn't. What was she carrying because that nigga was at home? Like, that's the thing. The writers really, and I'm sorry I'm on a rant, but the writers really play to how we are in society in general, how we have these conversations, these battles of the sexes. It's like, a nigga, like, there are women who are out here actually carrying niggas. She was not carrying niggas. But you could relate to those sound bites. You could relate to a nigga getting his shit together career-wise after y'all break up. And getting his shit together and doing everything that you wanted him to do. Hard part, Issa, your job was trash. You literally had to go sit and sleep on a friend's shit. Like, on the digger that you said was just your, what's he say? You were just like an itch I need to scratch. You used him. You manipulated the situation and you used him for your advantage and then you threw him back away. He clearly had feelings for you. Like, Issa, how then is that Issa that we're seeing play out in all those seasons potentially contributing to the shit that they were in this relationship? Stop talking to your fucking mirror. Talk to Lawrence. What was going on with you? That's the angle. Love that Lawrence was able to be, you know, candid and vulnerable, and she didn't shit on him for saying the things. It seemed like a revelation for her. But she, to your point, Lauren, she freaking made it about her.
I didn't like how, and it's good. I forgot she said that because I didn't like how she was like, I didn't want to come home. And it was just like, why? Like, what did he do? Like, he didn't do anything. But I think it just, like you said, they were both miserable. And two miserable people cannot support each other. They can't do nothing for each other.
Definitely not. Definitely not.
That's the point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was miserable too. Issa was happy at her job. She was not dead in. Her friends are thriving. She's not. She don't know what she want to do. She's in that same space, but it always focused on Lawrence being in that space. I'm like, right, you were too. So, two miserable people together right now in this moment, not supporting one another. I just wanted her. I was hoping that the writers would put that aspect and that spin on it to show, like, in her conversation with Lawrence. Yeah, we've seen it. We haven't seen it in the pretense of, like, this is my boyfriend at the time, I have more knowledge to him that I was also in this bad space, and that may have contributed, or that was contributing to these things in our relationship.
Right. And Lawrence, yes, he was miserable, but he didn't go out and cheat.
Yeah, he didn't.
Issa did. So she can't blame that on him.
Yeah, you said that she blamed him. It did feel like, bruh, we was miserable. You wasn't loving on me. You wasn't doing all this other shit. So it kind of led to that. It is no excuse. But so and as I'm reading, I'm like, yeah, it's no excuse. But you basically just told him that if he basically had a job and, you know, he wasn't in his funk, then you would have never cheated.
Right. It was all about what she needed. And I feel like she didn't acknowledge what he needed. At that time, yes. You're not happy with your job. I get it. But at that time, he needed a partner, girl. And sometimes in relationships, you have to put your own bullshit aside. You see he's in this funk. Like, put your own shit aside for a minute, girl. It's not about you all the time. It's not about your needs all the time. And she, in that conversation, I did not get the whole, you know what, Lawrence, I should have gotten over myself, really. I don't know why I expected those things from you when you were in the state that you were in, and I'm sorry. I would have liked to hear that instead of, well, I cheated because you weren't there for me, or you weren't showing me attention, and that's all I heard. That's all okay. I heard. I wanted you to want me.
Yeah. Never mind that you were depressed and it's
crazy. Yes.
Never mind that you've been unemployed and I've been seeing you apply to these jobs and you keep on getting no. I've tried to help you, but it is not working through. So clearly this is something way bigger than what I can even do. Never mind that. I'm not feeling love. So
I'm like,
well, I don't know. I don't know. I would have just left it there.
Okay. All right. So I can see that. I can definitely see it. Because like you said, we all agree. When two people are definitely going through their own stuff, they can't be there for each other. Because they both bog down in their own stuff, right? So I think that's very clear. You know, and not even, I think a lot of reason why this closure conversation was such a big deal is because Lawrence actually specifically asked about like why Daniel, why him, right? Because they did have a bit of a closure conversation at the end of season two when Issa was moving out the apartment, and there wasn't we're like I, and I remember Issa saying something. I can't remember. She said something like she felt like she realized maybe she was putting too much pressure, or like she was having too high of expectations that he couldn't fulfill. Because remember, they kind of had it out at the dinner birthday party, and she was like, well, what about the time I was sitting there, you know, supporting your depressed ass? And then he was like, well, you know, maybe you wouldn't have been out there acting like a hoe. So they both still had some aggression. And then when they came back after shit settled, they both kind of acknowledged in a way like, you know, maybe we were in a space that we couldn't be there for each other, and we were putting the expectations on each other that neither one of us could fulfill. Kinda is what I got. But I will agree, it never was explicitly said, like Lawrence explicitly did say, watching right. you go to work every day hurt my pride. No, Issa didn't explicitly say, like, yeah, we got y'all was putting me through bullshit. I was depressed about that. Like, she didn't explicitly say that. So I will agree with y'all there that she could have. And I know a lot of it is a writing thing, you know. We talking about this stuff like, man, like we get so hyped. But
that's what I'm saying, though. When I'm talking about it, it's still writing. And I'm like, I'm responding to what I'm seeing in the writing.
Yeah, right.
Like it's not, I don't have a personal grievance with Issa. Like,
right, yeah. But I can see how that could have made even more of a difference in the conversation, her being specific mm-hmm. to those issues. I mean, I do still get, you know, like you said, the space that Lawrence gave for her to be able to say, like, this is how I was feeling. Not saying it's an excuse for her cheating, but, you know, it does play a part in how people drift apart in relationships when one or both people are going through mental and emotional problems. And if you are trying to be a support and it seems like nothing is working, it does cause that distance. It does cause someone to feel like, well, maybe I am the problem. Maybe it's me. And that I think that's a real thing. You know,
I never said maybe it's me in our life.
Well, not maybe. She did. She did. I'm just saying in general, Jen. Like, right. You know, like yeah. So I'm just saying, like, that is a real thing. Like, just like, and that's what something I've been noticing with friends. Like, a lot of the themes in this, I think, in this season has been revolving around communication and not us really being open and vulnerable about how we're feeling in the moment until the ticking time bomb does go off. Now everything's blown to pieces. Now we have to take all this time and space to work on ourselves. Then we finally come and have a conversation. And so, like, that's the thing about closure. It's like, it's one of those things where it's like, in some cases, it's been helpful, I'm sure. But then in some cases, we wonder, okay, is this necessary in this actual situation? Or why is it that we feel like we need to have closure sometimes when, like Lauren said, things could have been addressed then? Like, Issa definitely could have been addressed stuff with Lawrence. I've always said that, you know, like you said, she did initially break up with him and she didn't stick to her guns about that. So then they was getting back together, working on things, which thought helped Lawrence think like, okay, you know, we're getting back to a good place. And then she cheated. And yeah, that was messed up. Like, had she just stuck to her, nah, we done, I can't do this anymore, then she would have went with Daniel. Nobody probably would have had nothing, you know, to say. And how she did do Daniel was messed up too. Now, I mean, their relationship was kind of murky too, because I think from what I understand the timeline, it's her and Daniel had history before Lawrence came in the picture. That's what I get. And so there was a time that Issa had real feelings for Daniel, but he wasn't trying to be with her. So I think at some point they were just friends with benefits. They were friends with benefits, but she had real feelings. And then at some point, that's when she met Lawrence and they had their relationship. So yeah, in that point in time when Daniel was like, oh, I really got feelings for you, Issa is all in her, just all messed up in the head. And then when she, you know, pops back to reality, like, no, I really have a good thing with Lawrence. She deflected. She put that mechanism, was like, no, this really wasn't what that is. And you know, even in her and Daniel's relationship, like when she was living on the couch, she ended up finally saying like, you know, honestly, the reason why we got all this tension is because I had feelings for you before. And she never fully admitted to that either. So I think that's the whole thing with closure and really coming to terms with things. It's just the fact that while I think it can be helpful, but I feel like it wouldn't always have to nest. It wouldn't be such a thing if we did do better with just overall communicating what we're feeling in the moment versus waiting until the ticking time bomb goes off. That's what I would say. So I wanted to ask y'all personally though, what have been y'all personal experiences in regards to closure? Lord, because I already know where she's about to go. what are y'all personal experiences as far as getting closure? What if you've ever felt like you needed closure when it came to the ending of a past relationship, or maybe you didn't want closure, but your ex-significant other was trying to get closure. I just want to know, like, what has been y'all experiences in dealing with that in relationships? Lauren, you ready to share? I don't know. You made a face like, Jeff, oh, no.
Jeff, you can go ahead and go. I'll go after you.
I'm over here thinking, like, closure is not a big deal for me. You know, I really focus on my awareness and being self, like, accountable and, you know, like the good and the bad. And I don't need, because I think it's difficult, especially if, you know, history is with people who don't necessarily take accountability. So then the idea of my closure and allowing someone else's actions to prevent me from moving forward, like I don't want anybody to have that type of control over me. So I typically go through my own process and I focus on myself versus this situation. Are those thoughts there? Yeah, but I am diligent and deliberate about not allowing that to keep me in my space. I don't need to know all that. If that happens, I hope that it's led with more like Lawrence, right? Versus the Issa. Like, I don't need any rationale for why you did these things. I prefer for you to just own and be responsible for the things that you did versus, you know, pinning it on somebody. Like, take full accountability, and I'm always open, but I'll be in another relationship or I'll be doing something else, I'm not gonna wait on somebody for that. So, and as we talked earlier about the friendships, man, no, I mean, I don't need no closure from no whatever. Like, it's not that deep. Like, love you, bro. Man, our relationship is different. We ebb and flow in our relationships, and we come back, and we whatever else. Our love from that perspective and our friendships is truly unconditional, I think. And I think we always typically just accept people for who they are and for that post. And if we're not on that same wind, we don't have any problem creating distance, and it happens naturally versus trying to fight for it to, like, work while we're not on the same page. Like, and I think that's you know, the best way to go about it, and we should probably do more of that in other aspects. But that's really all I got. I didn't want to get – I'm not going to get too personal because y'all – what's closure?
Okay. Jeff said, y'all not about to get me.
Nobody get me on record talking about my
personal life. Okay. So somebody can text you talking about something. You talking about me? You guys talking about
me? Yeah. Somebody's going to be like, do we?
I'm nothing on that. I love everybody.
Okay, so low, because you know, you made all the face. See, I think y'all have to remember, Lo and I have been best friends for 10 years ago. Yeah.
Well, come on. Are you they?
Yes. 09. Yeah, so 11. This is going on 11 years. So y'all got to understand, yes. When I see Lo's faces, I already know what she's about to say. But, you know, I go spoil it.
closure. I have had, like, one experience with closure. Now that time has passed, I don't know. Closure is just, it can be awkward and it can be weird depending on what happened in the situation. Mm-hmm. I will say this. I do think that depending on the situation, closure is needed, especially, like, outside of friendships, but, like, if you're in a relationship, I feel like it is needed, especially if it didn't end on the best terms. But the only way that a person is really going to take what they need from a closure conversation, I think that it just comes down to, like, their intent. Like, what are you looking to get out of closure? Like what is the reason for this conversation? Like, are you looking to possibly, like, rekindle a friendship or a relationship, or are you just bored? Like, are you just, like, wondering what they're doing? For instance, I would just be specific. The closure conversation I had was after a breakup, and we met to talk, and there was no apology. There was no nothing, sort of similar to the conversation that Issa and Lawrence had. It just, no accountability. So at that time, the closure conversation really just wasn't needed because I didn't even get what I thought that I was going to get out of having the conversation with that person. So I'll just say, like, closure, it's not always needed. Like, I'll agree with Jeff on that. Like, I think that you can do the growing and that you need to do individually without all of that. You can. It's not always needed.
Yeah, I think good point. I think it, like, the closure, I'm like, what is the goal from that?
Yes.
Like, mm-hmm. What does it do? Like, if you weren't, and that's the other thing, like, if you weren't accountable in, and you weren't given reasons why, like, in a relationship, then what is this, do you now do it? Like, I could see that opening up new wounds and
yep.
You know, direction. So I don't truly know. I think closure, it sounds like it's probably best when it's really closing a past chapter when you're looking to move forward.
Yep.
But if you're not, if it's not,
yes.
I don't know. Just acknowledgement, I guess? I don't know.
Yes. I do think that closure, like, if you are looking to move forward, I do think that it is good because it is reassuring that you are taking the right steps to become a better person, you know, and sometimes it's just I mean, it does open up old wounds, but like, for instance, just the situation that I was in, like, it just showed me that I had made the right decision the first time, you know? And sometimes you need that, because I'm a person, I don't like to live with regret or like, well, what if, you know, I would have moved this way? How would things turn out? So I think that it's also good for that reason. Like, if you're looking to move forward and you just need reassurance, like, the closure conversation is all for you. But if you're not a person that needs that, it's really pointless. Like, it's pointless. It's not really worth time, because you're not really gaining anything from it. Like, what are you gaining from it? Nothing.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. I don't know what you're gaining or something.
No.
Okay, so y'all had some very, very interesting, good answers there. Okay. So I would say for me, like, y'all, moving forward, I think, is a big part of it. You know, like I said, what is the goal of this closure? Because I think it can, you do have that chance of opening old wounds, reopening feelings that you might have took the time to get over and, you know, I move past. Next thing you know, you like, oh, wait, hold on. Do I want to work it out with this person? You know.
All I wanted them to do was apologize in the moment. Now they apologizing after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like, okay, now I got to apologize. It's like, well, maybe we can. But then, you know, and so then you get to thinking of all these possible outcomes. And I've definitely gone through that myself in trying to, like, just, okay, I close this door, this person now. And then there's cases where, like you said, Jen, like I said, I did the process on my own. I never had a conversation, whether the guy ghosted or, you know, just it didn't work out or whatever happened. And I did the process myself, healed, moved on, ain't thought about him, nothing. Then next thing you know, beep, hey, what you doing? Why are you on my phone? Nick, I done moved on from you. Why are you in my DM, sir? I ain't thought about you in a coon's age. I have done the work, and why are you still hit my line? And before, I was more willing to possibly, oh, well, maybe we can do a second chance. But now that I've been doing my own personal growth journey, I've been in therapy, you know, really looking at my past relationship struggles, I've been taking accountability. Lo can tell you, I've grown, guys. I've really grown in a lot of ways, and I'm proud of myself for that. So yes, and so now there's been a couple times someone old has, like, popped up, and now I'm more to be like, okay, do I really need to open this door yet again? Before I open this door, what's really good? Like, what is it that you're wanting, sir? Why are you popping back up in my life? Because, you know, like, I'm like I said, I'm all for love. And I do believe there are certain instances where second chances can be a good thing, you know, because people, like I said, people can grow, they can change, and then they may come back together and it actually works out. It happens. But there's definitely a time where we have to be real with ourselves and making sure, like, okay, before I go back into this or before I open this door, is this really something I need to do? And I'm still a work in progress on that. I've done better in some ways. I'm still working on it personally in other ways. But I can definitely see the growth and where now I am more apt to ask the question, like, okay, like I've been like, God, now you know the history I had with this person. You know where I was when things ended. You know, I do believe in change, but I've given the benefit of the doubt before and it blew up in my face. So if I need to leave this door closed, let me know. Cause I'm not trying to reopen that door and then, you know, just wind up in the same place again. So yeah, I do think if it's, you know, if it is a part of moving forward, you know, what I say about as far as Lawrence and Issa's conversation, I think in a way it was maybe needed probably more so for Lawrence, because he had some questions about himself based off how his situation was with Condola. Because he started off with saying, like, maybe I give up on things too much. Like, maybe I gave up too soon on it. So I think he was seeking answers, not just as far as him and Issa's relationship and what happened, but just his personal growth too. And so that's where I would say closure is good. If you're, you're trying to get answers and things, that's going to help you to be better in the future, in the long run. Because, you know, sometimes... what'd you say, Jeff?
Yeah, and that's what I loved about how it was a beautiful aspect on his part.
Yeah.
Because he was reflecting, he was open to hearing those things, and he was taking it in.
Mm-hmm.
That's dope.
Yeah, exactly. And
that's a great point.
Yeah. So, because I think that's what sometimes, you know, like I said, in that moment, you may not be able to see those things about yourself and how you, you know, may have contributed to this relationship going the way it did. You know, like, I mean, I know there's the whole, we know that Lawrence, the whole debate about whether Lawrence was contributing or not, but like there was even the reference where, you know, Lawrence was so up in arms about Issa, which he had every right to because she cheated and she was wrong. But even her, his friend was like, you know, back in season two, was like, now remember, you know, you was there for two, his own friend, this is another male saying this, like, you was on the couch for 2 years. Like, she probably did feel a way too. And not to say, not to invalidate Lawrence, but it was clear Issa had her own feelings as how, with the things that was going wrong in their relationship. So that's why I did like their conversation, because they both got to voice where they were and how they felt about their relationship at that time, because neither one of them knew what the other person was thinking. So I felt like that did answer, get those questions he answered. He, you know, he didn't, you know, have the answers to overall about their relationship and himself. So that's why I would say closure is good for those, for like for that personal growth. And, you know, if you are needing to get some, if there are those unanswered questions where it's like, I would feel better knowing the answer to this, so that way I can take this lesson and apply it in the future, I'm all for that. But I would say if you're looking for closure to see if something can work again, that's clearly not meant to work out. Don't open that door, sis, my brother. Don't do that. You just gonna open a whole nother can of worms and be all emotionally distraught. And then all that growth you did, you know, you're gonna be taking some steps back. So I would just say, if you're thinking about having a conversation with an ex significant other, definitely be mindful of what is it that you're wanting to accomplish in that conversation. Are you trying to have this conversation to hope that they still have feelings for you and you trying to get back together? Are you seeking personal growth? You know, what is it that you're trying to really accomplish? Like, I know I had one time, I ended up did having a closure conversation that I didn't initiate, didn't think was gonna happen. It just happened with a guy I used to date. And he actually started off with saying, you know, I apologize for how I handled things between us. And I was like, whoa, wait, okay, we're gonna talk about this? Okay. Like, all right, well, we're here now, so let's go on and discuss it. And so I accepted his apology, and then I told him how I was feeling, but I also made sure to hear him out and where he was and how he was feeling. And so, you know, we both apologized and acknowledged how things could have went better as far as our communication, how we handled things, and how it fell out with us. And, you know, we didn't start dating again or anything like that, but we've still been cool, kept in touch every now and then. And there was a moment where I thought, maybe what if, but I've grown since then again. And so, you know, now, like, I've talked to him a little bit since then. I've talked to him here and there, hung out with him a couple times. And like I said, there was a time I thought, what if, but then when he, you know, kind of disappeared again, I was like, okay, this clearly must not be meant to be. And then when he kind of popped back up, I was like, pause, let me not go there. So yeah, I would say that just best definitely just know what it is that you're wanting and be honest with yourself. I think that's a key factor when it comes to getting closure. So in having a closure conversation, for those, like, in the conversation, I think accountability is, like, the biggest thing that needs to be present. What other things do y'all feel like should be addressed if someone is seeking to have a conversation? What are those things that absolutely should be addressed? And how should we go about addressing it?
If there were big things that created it, like stuff like that, I think if they did mark, I think that is, but... That, and then you taking responsibility.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
What is closure without you taking explicit accountability for your shit? And then we address the big thing that may have happened.
Mm-hmm.
But that, bruh.
Yep. accountability is the main thing. And then also, I think that in closure conversations, now that you're bringing up how you feel and all the issues that you had, why, I guess that another question that needs to be asked in that conversation is why you didn't bring it up in the moment. What prevented you from bringing it up in that moment? Was it me? Like, was I not receptive to what you had to say, which kind of made you not say anything at all? You'd rather just not say anything because I wasn't receptive? Like, what prevented you from communicating that in the moment?
I would definitely want to know that for sure. Because like we said earlier, you know, we will hold things in and we won't communicate. Then the bomb goes off. Now we're left with all the pieces. And now, and with the pieces comes all these questions. Well, how did we get here? What led up to this? What were you thinking? What was I, you know, how was I feeling? Where were you at this point? And then, you know, it just, it becomes this big old puzzle piece. And here we are trying to put the pieces together when we could have did that sooner and possibly salvaged the relationship. Or even if the relationship wasn't able to be salvaged, we could have probably ended it on an amicable note, is what I was trying to say. You know, it wouldn't have had to been the mess and the bomb exploding before we got to this point here, right? And I think that's just like the, like a very big factor in all of that is, you know, but I know I like you mentioned, Lo, I think a lot of it sometimes is we may not feel like the other person is being receptive or going to be receptive. I think sometimes we do often get in our heads, and so then we hold on to stuff, and then it builds up, and then it boils, and then, you know, like I said, it becomes too late to, the damage is done sometimes, right? So then even if you would think about salvaging the relationship, it's like, can we really do that now? Because look what's all happened. Look at all what has happened up to this point. You know, like, yeah, it's great we got here. It's great that we got to this point where we could address things, air it all out. You take accountability. I take accountability. Okay, great. But in going forward, does that mean that this relationship is absolutely savable? Like, do we really need to continue being together? Do we need to continue being friends, for example? So yeah, I think that's definitely a big part of it too. Like, why didn't you address this or bring this up before? And like we all know with Issa, her passive aggressiveness is obviously the reason why she doesn't address things head on, right? But then I think we also have to be mindful of ourselves, like you said, Lo, like, are we, kind of like with Molly, are we ready to do the work? If, because sometimes we can say, okay, well, because sometimes we will be like, well, why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you say anything? But are we sometimes like Molly? Are we really ready to hear what the other person has to say? Are we truly going to be able to be receptive? You know, like she said in therapy, Dr. Rhonda read her ass. Like, and she said, do you want relationship or do you want to be right? You know, and I think sometimes that would also is prevents us from being able to have those conversations and why sometimes we end up having closure because we're still not ready to hear about ourselves sometimes. I know I didn't did it. Transparency moment. So I think that's the other thing we have to take into account.
It is.
It really is. Especially when, you know, you trying or, you know, depending on what you're going through, it's like, man, I don't need to hear the extra shit. I got enough on my plate. But sometimes you do need to, you need that extra, that other person say, look, sis, like, I know you got this going on. I know you got that going on. Yes, you've been trying here, but you still need some work over here. And I know me personally, I've been working on becoming more receptive into that and not internalizing it. And I think that's sometimes we may internalize the things people tell us to work on or improve by ourselves if there's like it's bad. Like we start looking down on ourselves and it's really people trying to help. Now I will say it does make a difference in how things are said. Now if you just coming at me all heart, like all crazy and like putting me down, I'm definitely not going to be able to receive anything you have to say. So we have to be mindful in how we address things. I tell clients that I work with, y'all know I'm a therapist and doing like interpersonal skills and stuff. I always tell them that, you know, nonverbal communication says a whole lot more than what you actually say with your words and your tone and your eye contact, your posture, all that. Like if you're trying to tell me, you know, that you're concerned about something, a problem area, but if you got your finger in my face and you getting all mad, I'm going on defense. Cause now I'm like, okay, now you're talking shit. But if you actually sit me down and say, hey, Lex, this is something I've been seeing and noticing that I'm really concerned about with you. And I really just want to talk about it with you because, you know, cause I love and I care about you. I'm going to be more receptive to that. So I think definitely just in making sure when we are communicating things, we have to be mindful of where we are at mentally, being honest with ourselves, you know, being willing to hear what other people have to say. Like we have to be willing to do the work. I think overall, just in any relationship, we got to be willing to do the work ourselves. We definitely can't expect other people to do it for us, for sure. Okay, so my last point here, we're going to wrap up here soon. So as far as closure between romantic relationships and friendships. So Jeff, you kind of spoke to it earlier. You said like with male friendships, it's really not a whole bunch of, it's like, look, we cool, like it is what it is, bro. You know, God bless you, dap it up. If I see you, I keep, you know, I'll be cordial. We keep it pushing. Now I will say, I think as with us women, it cuts a lot deeper. we tend to have some long-standing issues in our friendships, and I can say that because I've been in it a few times in my life. But just like overall, what do y'all think as far as when it comes to a romantic relationship versus a friendship ending and then trying to make peace with that? What do y'all think, one is harder to do that with than the other? Are they both about the same? Or is it just a matter of, you know, like what, depend on what the relationship is between you and that friend versus your significant other? Like, what do y'all think?
I think it's harder with the significant other because, like I said, with men, we kind of like weave in and out and we're not necessarily always passive aggressive with each other. But even if we are, it's like where you are, this is where I'm at. Boom, we weave out. And then, you know, over time, we might find ourselves back together. But we create that distance. We're not going to – very rarely will you find men, I think, hanging around – and clinging on to people that doesn't, like, other men that doesn't really have value in their lives in that moment. So we create that distance. So the closure harder, I think closure in the relationships in general are just harder with women versus, you know, like, in our relation, interpersonal, our romantic relationships than it is with, you know, our boys.
Okay. What do you think, Lo?
I'll say a relationship. I think that is a little harder to deal with, just because of the kind of connection that you have with that person. But I think it depends also though on what happened, like what caused the failure of the relationship or friendship, because I do know that although it is hard to have like something happen with your significant other, a friendship, like, that's supposed to be your role dog, you know what I'm saying? Like,
sometimes friends is like family, like literally, like, yeah, I mean, I know we sometimes play around saying sis, but like, I know I like there's friends, like I literally look like you my sister, like we, like, blood couldn't make us any closer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that it just depends on what happened, but I will agree with Jeff on relationship, just because of the kind of, like, bond you have with that person.
Yeah, I would say there's a different type, like, while, you know, like I said, Lo and I've been knowing each other 11 years, you know, but, you know, like, it is a difference in the fact, you know, like, she's married, I'm not. I've always told her, like, you know, I love you, girl, but you married now. Like, I respect the fact that you have a whole nother bond with your husband that I can't feel for you in that way. And, you know, I'm glad that at least with, like, you know, with our friendship, me, her, and her husband, we are all like family too, but in some cases not always like that. So, you know, in being that the fact that I, you know, I think that what has helped us is the fact that I make sure I respect the fact that she is married. Like, while she's my best friend, she got another best friend. So, you know, I'm not going to be, I know I can't have the same type of expectations to her to always, I know she'll always be there if I need her, but I know I can't always expect that because she married, you know, she got another person she has to be there for. And so those boundaries, listen, we Malibu in the right way over here, you know? So I think it takes having that respect, like kind of like what you're saying, Jeff, as the friendship evolves, being as we evolve individually, be able to evolve within our friendship with that. And so that way we don't end up like Issa and Molly having tensions build up and then everything explodes. And it's like, okay, what do we do now? Right. But yeah, I would say like definitely relation. I feel like they can, like you said, low, it can depend on what happened. You know, where that weight of the friendship ending could be just as heavy and hard as a romantic relationship ending. But there's definitely a difference in the significance of the bonds. Cause you know, I mean, friends do come and go, you know, and significant others come and go, but it's a little harder because there's a certain level, I think, of vulnerability that is a step above, you know, with friendships. Because, you know, as far as a romantic relationship, you're looking at spending your life with this person, right? Like, you're looking to maybe possibly bring in children with this person. You're looking to have a future and build with this person. So that's a whole nother level of time, energy, emotions, love that's being put into that. You know, that's a whole nother level of teamwork and cooperation that's being put in there. Like, yeah, you know, I'm gonna support my sis and what she does, but like it's different when it's my husband, you know, because that's something that's gonna be tying us together to make sure our life is straight, you know, whoever my future husband is whenever he comes, you know. I'm just saying, like, there's definitely a difference in the significance there. So you know, as far as like friendship goes, like I said, I've been through where I've lost friends and I've never really had the closure conversation. It was just like shit popped off and boom, it ended. Well, I had one conversation one time with a friend, but I didn't feel like it was a real closure conversation where we ended amicably. Like, I did feel like, and Lo already know probably what I'm referring to, where I felt like that's why she made her face like, where a lot of it was like, I was told I was a bad friend because I wasn't supportive here and I wasn't there. And then, and you know, kind of talking like Issa's like, dang, have I been an Issa? Like, was I always kind of depending on people to be there for me and I wasn't there for them? But then when I really looked at the situation, I was like, nah, I don't really feel like that's what that was. And other people have said like, nah, that's definitely not what that was. So in that, I was, you know, it still kind of hurts because it was with a friend and other friends that I've really known all my life, but I've also still been able to move forward with my life and knowing that, you know, it is what it is. We had our friendship there's the good memories that I won't forget. And yeah, it, you know, it hurts because I don't like to lose friends. But overall, I know I don't personally need a closure conversation or to go back over or rehash anything with any of those people. Like, it is what it is. We had our season clearly is it. And if it is actually meant for us to come back together and have a conversation, and I would say this, whether it's with a friend or an ex, then, you know, it'll happen, and it'll happen in the right way if it's truly meant to happen like that. All right. Now my son thinks he's a construction worker. He got his little toy power drill out. But yeah. So yeah, just overall, I think we can all agree as far as when it comes to closure, it definitely needs to be for the right reasons. We need to make sure that we're mentally and emotionally ready to have that conversation, because it's not going to all about be how you feel. You have to be willing to hear how the other person feels too. And we have to be willing to take accountability for our part in how the relationship went. And just making sure that you do know what your primary goal is, and be be emotionally mature that if the relationship is not meant to be salvaged, know that that's okay. It's okay. Closure doesn't necessarily mean that you have to get back together with an ex or you have to bring the friendship back together. It's just that you, so that you can walk away with your peace of mind. I think overall, that's what closure should be about. Walking away with your own peace of mind and making sure that whatever you, that what you get from the closure helps your own personal growth in the end. I feel like that's what it should be. And if you're not doing that, sis, then that ain't really closure. And you just need to keep the door closed. Keep the door closed and go through your process and do what you need to do for you.
Fine. And not in your growth should depend on whether or not that door is closed, because you're basically putting that in the hands of someone else to also say the things
right
that you said in order for that to happen.
Right.
That's what makes it.
You said that's what makes it what, Jeff?
Yeah, I think that's what makes it. Look at it from that perspective. I need this for the second one. But you need something from something else for you to get to a better space. And that's very difficult.
Myself again. But I'll say, yeah, you can't depend on another person to give you what you need to heal. Because that's not on them. That's not their responsibility. Because you may not ever get it. So if you're waiting on that person to come around and apologize or take responsibility and accountability for what they did, you might be waiting your whole life, sis, and or my brother. This goes for everybody. You might end up waiting your whole life waiting to get something that's never going to happen. And then you wind up with the chip on your shoulder and bitter. So, you know, understand that you may not get those answers and you have to be okay with that and making sure that at the end of the day, you're healing for you and nobody else, period. I think we can all agree there. All right. So we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. I want to say thank you again for Gay Gang Squad Hoosiers All Day, for Jeff and Lo coming through. This was great conversation. Also, say gay, gay. Oh, what'd you say, Jeff?
I said, no, thank you again for having me.
Thank you.
To have these conversations.
I'm glad, you know, that's what the free space is all about. Having these unfiltered, you see what I did there? You see what I did there? Yes. Having these unfiltered and unrestricted conversations and be able to talk about these things that we don't always, you know, we may not always think about right away, but we should be talking about them. I think it helps us all to be able to learn from each other and just personally grow, you know. Plus, you know, I do like hearing other people's perspectives. Like, I know at first you and I was like, nah, Jeff. I was like, Issa was honest, but I was like, okay, I can see this. Okay. I feel you. I feel you here. Okay, I get it.
So, I wasn't trying to spit on her. Like, I just was like, understand that we've seen all this other stuff. Have we thought about this too?
That's right. Mm-hmm. I feel that. Right. And that's what I'm about to. Okay. All right. I'll come fix it. Yeah, we're gonna wrap this up because my child needs me to switch the movie again. Come on. Okay, but yes, Jeff, make sure you give me your links so I can make sure I plug in Be Nimble and Party Gras. Like I said, hopefully we don't get no second, third waves of the Rona. So Party Gras 5 can happen in February of 2021. Let me go start looking for my dress. Let me get it together.
I've already been looking, girl.
Listen, I'm trying to come full force for 2021, okay? Especially because I will be 30. Listen, 30 is a whole, speaking of closing the chapters, I turned 30 in November. Whole new chapter opening. So I got to come correct in 2021. Okay? Okay. Lord, don't give me that face. She's like,
I'm not ready. I'm 29 again. I'm out here in these streets.
All right, y'all.
All right. Well, yeah, just gonna give me the links. Y'all join Lo for Wind Downs with Lo on Fridays. She be posting on her story on Instagram. and be on the lookout for when she drop her wig business. Get, you know, you might need that wig for Party Girl. You might need that for Party Girl next year. And make sure y'all follow The Free Space on Facebook and Instagram at The Free Space Podcast. Follow on Twitter at @the_free_space. Email the podcast at thefreespacepod@gmail.com. Follow on Anchor, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, make sure you leave a review because I like to read those. And this is episode 50. Is it 54? Look, sometimes I lose my number. Yes, 54. The door is closed. Thanks y'all so much for tuning and listening, and y'all be blessed. Mommy.